Study tonight is out of Daniel chapter 5, verses 1 through 31. God's enforcing his sovereignty over Nebuchadnezzar's successors. As believers living in a spiritually decaying, godless culture, we need to live affirmatively in victory over sin. Daniel, as a young man, was taken captive by godless Babylonians, and he lived through Persia's conquest of Babylon, righteously and wisely serving the Lord in a godless culture is a great example for us. So we view Daniel 5:1-31 and God's enforcing his sovereignty over Nebuchadnezzar's successors for our insight. We've covered about how God enforced his sovereignty over Nebuchadnezzar, but Daniel and his three friends are still living in Babylon, and when Nebuchadnezzar dies, the one wonders, what's going to happen now? This is always a concern whenever there's a turnover in the administration, a new leader in the country. Well, we have a new situation that comes up here in Daniel chapter 5. We learned in our last lesson in Daniel 4:1-37 that God worked in Nebuchadnezzar to make him a believer. However, Nebuchadnezzar's successors did not share his faith, and Daniel and his fellow Hebrews and Babylon were left facing several ungodly successors of Nebuchadnezzar as follows. When Nebuchadnezzar died in 562 BC and Daniel was about 60 years of age, Nebuchadnezzar's son, Amel-Marduk, succeeded him. But he was murdered by his brother-in-law, the Nergal-Sharezer. That's an officer in 560 BC. The Nergal-Sharezer's son, Labashi-Marduk, succeeded him in 556 BC, but he, in turn, was assassinated by a group that included Nabonidus, who then became king. Nabonidus entrusted the rule of his kingdom to his son Belshazzar, while Nabonidus retired to Arabia. Now, I know in the passage in front of us, it refers to Belshazzar as the son of Nebuchadnezzar, and he refers to Nebuchadnezzar as his father. It was not uncommon to refer to an ancestor or a previous king as your father, even though you weren't related to him. So we have to keep that in mind. But it's very interesting. Belshazzar promised to make Daniel the third in the kingdom. The reason was Belshazzar himself was second. The first was Nabonidus. He's on vacation over in Arabia, but he's here serving. So this little tidbit demonstrates the absolute historical accuracy of the book of Daniel. He's going to make him third because he couldn't make him second. Anyway, when Belshazzar came to the throne, the Persian army approached Babylon, threatening to invade the city. So Belshazzar evidently tried to boost his officials' morale by hosting a great feast for them. And this is where we get to verse 1 of chapter 5 in Daniel. Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in front of 1,000. It's also interesting to notice that when the Persians invaded Babylon, the night they invaded it, that was this night, they said the city was all drunk, so they were very easy to conquer. So that's another little tidbit that happens to match the historicity of Daniel. Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in front of 1,000. Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the gold and silver vessels, which his father, that would be his ancestor, or the former king Nebuchadnezzar, had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem. This is God's vessels, that the king and his princes, his wives and his concubines might drink therein. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem, and the king, his princes, his wives and his mistresses drank them in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, of brass, of iron, of wood and of stone. Well, in the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over on the wall against the candlestick on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. And the king's countenance was changed and his thoughts troubled him so that the joints of his loins were loosened and his knees struck one against the other. That's, you got to be pretty scared for that to happen. So, after Belshazzar had this party, he then called for the vessels that Nebuchadnezzar had taken from God's temple that his guests might drink from wine from them in blasphemous praise of the sovereignty of Babylon's gods over the gods of other lands that Babylon had conquered, implying that Babylon's gods would protect them from Persia. See what he was trying to do? He's trying to build up the morale of his officers. So he said, let's have a party. And he brought out the vessels, probably the vessels not only of Israel's God, but of the other gods that they, you know, vessels they'd taken from their temples. And they were drinking wine in them, indicating that their gods, the gods of Babylon, were greater than all these other gods so that they could conquer them. So they would be, their gods were also greater than the Persians' gods. So they would be able to defeat the Persians when they tried to come against them. This is all a morale booster, but he made a mistake in trying to indicate that his gods were greater than God. And guess what? God doesn't like that. He doesn't like when Gentiles do it. That's why I remember when the Philistines got a hold of the Ark of the God and they put it in the temple of Dagon as though Dagon was the superior God and made Dagon fall down, remember? So God doesn't like it even when Gentiles are involved in trying to exalt their gods over him. So God revealed his sovereignty in contrast to godless Belshazzar's blasphemous activity. While Belshazzar praised Babylon's gods over Judah's true God, a hand suddenly appeared, writing a message on the wall behind the gold candlestick that had been taken from Jerusalem's temple. The king cried for his counselors to read and interpret the message, offering to make the one who could do so the third ruler in the kingdom. That's after his father Nabonidus and himself. But they couldn't do so. Verses 7 and 8, the king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, the soothsayers. The king spake and said to the wise men of Babylon, whosoever shall read this writing and show me the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about his neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Then came in all the king's wise men, but they could not read the writing nor make known to the king the interpretation thereof. Then was the king Belshazzar greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonished. Now the queen, by reason of the words of the king, his lords came into the banquet house, and the queen spoke and said, O king, live forever. Let not your thoughts trouble thee, nor let your face be changed. There is a man in thy kingdom, in whom is the spirit of the holy God, or gods. And in the days of your father, or that would be ancestor, light and understanding and wisdom like the wisdom of the gods was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, your ancestor, or the predecessor, the king, I say, the father made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. For as much as there is an excellent in spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams and showing of hard sentences and dissolving of doubts, they were found in the same Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will show the interpretation thereof. Then was Daniel brought in before the king. The king spoke and said to Daniel, are you that Daniel which are of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom thy king, my father, brought out of Judea? I've even heard of you, that the spirit of the gods is in thee, that light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought before me, that they should read this writing and make it known unto me the interpretation thereof. They could not show the interpretation of the thing. And I've heard of you, that you can make interpretations and dissolve doubts. Now if you can read the writing and make known to me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet, have a chain of gold about thy neck, and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. And Daniel said to the king, he answered before the king, let your gifts be to yourself, and give your rewards to another. So he knew this king was going to lose his life and Babylon was going to be overthrown that night. So he didn't want to be a ruler in that kind of a kingdom. So that's dangerous. So he said, keep your gifts. But I will make known to him the interpretation. And so Daniel told the king to keep his gifts, but that he would interpret the writing. And to provide a context for the message, Daniel said that Nebuchadnezzar had testified that he came to revere God. But Belshazzar did not humble himself, though knowing of the Nebuchadnezzar's testimony. That was the testimony that we read last time, where Nebuchadnezzar had learned by being humiliated by the Lord and being struck with philanthropy that you need to serve the holy God of heaven. And Belshazzar knew this. He knew about that, but he didn't honor the Lord at all. In fact, Belshazzar had exalted himself against God by misusing God's holy vessels. In Daniel chapter 5, verse 23. But thou hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels in his house before you, and you and your lords, your wives, your mistresses have drunk wine in them, and you have praised the gods of silver and gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which do not see or hear nor know. And the God in whose hand your breath is, and whose are your ways, you have not glorified. He laid it out for Belshazzar. Your life, Belshazzar, is in his hand. He controls how long you live, and you haven't honored him. Then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this is the writing. It was written. And this is the writing that was written. Mene, mene, tekel, upharsin. Okay, and we're going to see what this is. Daniel then explained the writing that announced God's judgment of Belshazzar. Mene was an Aramaic noun referring to a weight of 50 shekels. And it came from the verb mena, to number or to reckon. And the noun is doubled to make it emphatic, especially in Hebrew. In a lot of Semitic languages, when you want to emphasize something, you double it. In Hebrew, if you say, you want to say he tore, you say running he ran. Okay. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee. Literally in the Hebrew, thou wilt keep him in peace whose mind is stayed on thee. That means perfect peace, complete peace. Well, here, mini mini is doubled. So the noun is doubled to make it emphatic, meaning that God had really numbered Belshazzar's kingdom and he had finished it. Belshazzar's reign was finished. Tekel is a noun, refers to a shekel from the verb tekal, to weigh. Belshazzar had been weighed in the balances by God and found to be lacking, so he himself would be punished. In those days, they would weigh. We have, I think in the Supreme Court, there's an image of a woman with the blindfold over eyes, and she's holding up the balances, and we're weighing. And that's a picture. It goes back to antiquity. It talks about weighing people in the balances to see whether or not they would weigh heavy enough in order to avoid judgment. But here he was found lacking. He went. The scale went up on him. Upharsin. U is actually the conjunction and. It's a vav in front of it. And it renders the pronoun, renders the noun parsin, which is half a mina, or 25 shekels, and comes from the verb paras, to break into or to divide. So the kingdom of Babylon would be divided, with part being given to the Medes and the other part to the Persians. Daniel would have known this because the Persian army was right outside the walls. So he's indicating, you know, that it's all over for you, Belshazzar. Well, it's interesting that Daniel says, verse 28, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. In spite of Daniel giving him this bad message, notice what Belshazzar did. Verse 29, then commanded Belshazzar, they went ahead and clothed Daniel with scarlet. They put a chain of gold around his neck and made him proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. Daniel was probably saying, thanks a lot. You know, the Persians are about to come in here, and I'm third in the kingdom. Guess what? That's risking my life. But nevertheless, that very night, Belshazzar was slain by the invading Persians, and Darius the Mede took the kingdom at age 62. This occurred in 539 BC, and Daniel would have been 83 years old. Now remember, we haven't come to Daniel in the lion's den yet. Daniel is thrown into the lion's den, not when he is a strong young man. He's in his 80s, right? And he's falling from the Daniels. I'm getting ahead of myself, but he's falling down about 14, 15 feet into this group of lions. So it's amazing. In the fall, he didn't break a hip or something. He's in his 80s, and the Lord protected him. But God demonstrated his ongoing complete sovereignty over Nebuchadnezzar's successors. Notice, in that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius the Mede took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. Darius was 62 years of age. And Daniel survived that because in the next chapter he realized that Darius wanted to set Daniel over the entire kingdom. It must have been the work of God to protect Daniel through this transfer from Babylonian Empire over to a Persian Empire. So though Nebuchadnezzar was succeeded by several ungodly kings, ending with Belshazzar, who desecrated God's holy temple vessels, regardless of knowing about Nebuchadnezzar's testimony that God was to be honored, God still demonstrated his sovereignty by the handwriting on the wall and its fulfillment that very night. We use the phrase, the handwriting's on the wall. We often use that means thing. It's all over. It's very clear what the judgment is. And that's a saying that has come in through our culture and is very, very meaningful to us. So may we trust the continuing absolute sovereignty of God over all rulers, both godly and ungodly. We were under President Donald Trump for 4 years with an election that has some dubious results. We now are under a different administration. But God is continuing to be just as sovereign as he was with Donald Trump's reign, as he has been ever since the days of Nebuchadnezzar, ever since the days of the successors of Nebuchadnezzar. God's still on the throne. And he's going to get done. He's going to achieve what he wants to achieve. So what we need to do is to trust the continuing absolute sovereignty of God over all rulers, both godly and ungodly, and just keep serving the Lord. It's been something that, as we've gone through this transition from one administration to the other, how many professing Christians have demonstrated their nervousness and concerns and fears. I think there's a tendency sometimes for us to put our trust in human administrations around us. What we should be doing is always trusting the heavenly administration, because really that's where our citizenship is. Our citizenship is in heaven, says Paul. And we're looking forward to the coming of Christ, who's going to invade this world, and he's going to take it over and produce his kingdom. So may we trust in God and relax and just continue to serve the Lord, doing his will.